Welcome to the first episode of Dumbledelkia Season 12 Recaps from Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Armstrong, and joining me as always are the Canadian who definitely has a video where someone makes a mistake and ends up walking with a limp, Logan Saunders.
Good afternoon.
And the guy who isn't the Messiah of Melbourne, but is a very naughty boy, David Bindley.
Good morning.
Good day, champion. You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Fun couple of weeks without me?
Yeah.
Been palming me off to the other Australian and aunt.
Yep.
You know what? The description for the contestants, none of the descriptions was a contestant with a face that looks like a pigeon. That didn't make it into my notes.
That's a shame.
I was saying to Bindles before we started recording that we were on tenterhooks to find out what your descriptions of everyone was going to be.
They're pretty easy to tell apart this season.
Yeah, but you still need to do these descriptions just mainly for my amusement.
I do. I did have the descriptions there from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think it's only right to start the season with the question I'm going to ask every week. Where in the world is Logan Saunders?
I'm right here in Canada right now.
Not for long, though.
Not for long, indeed.
How many weeks is it till you go away?
For like when I head off to Newfoundland and Europe? What's that? Pretty much in a little over a month.
Ooh.
April 30th.
And then off to the motherland after Belgian mole I spotted on your Instagram story?
Yes. Yep.
And quite appropriately, the next question is, how do we feel about Sicily as a location choice?
They definitely you can tell they have a very specific concept to go with from start to finish. I mean, during Vidim, we said, oh, they'll probably do some sort of mafia challenge. And sure enough, we got a mafia challenge to conclude the episode.
Mm. And on that note, I did go to Mum and Dad's on Sunday, as I so often do. Mum and Dad were talking about maybe going to Mexico, and they were looking at a particular location. And Mum went, that's the place that's famous for the Dia del... And my immediate reaction was Topo, not... Genuinely, hand on heart, I went Topo. Oh no, that was the mole one, wasn't it? Shit.
I think Muerte is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, Los Muertos was the the correct one.
You tell Topo.
Yeah, genuinely, I was still in my mole frame of mind, even though we hadn't done it for what 10 days at that point. To go, yeah, it was Dia del Topo, because I made sure that I said it correctly on the podcast every week.
I like, in terms of stylish entrances, on one end of the spectrum, we've had contestants buried in graves. And on the other end, they get to ride in on a yacht on the first day.
Yeah, I mean, that first shot of Gilles on the prow of the yacht was just far too extra even for us, I think.
As soon as I saw that, I was thinking, okay, they can get away with another Europe season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think I'm ready for them to spend some time away from the Mediterranean if they're doing a Europe season, like somewhere in Eastern Europe, or, you know, probably too expensive, but like Finland or Sweden or whatever. But if they're going to make a Mediterranean season this good, I'm all in.
Yeah, I mean, lest we forget that the Germany season was supposed to be Russia at one point before, you know, everything happened.
Everything. It's like three different things happened.
Yeah, the whole COVID and invasion of Ukraine sort of got in the way a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got Germany instead, which was a fantastic season. In his preseason press as well, Gilles did confirm that there were going to be Godfather references, which we sort of expected knowing how Gilles' mind operates. And he also said that they went to some locations of, quote-unquote, dubious ownership, which does sound like something that Saunders would do.
Yep.
He was asked whether they'd directly interacted with the mafia, and he's like, not that we officially know of, but we did go to some places of dubious ownership.
I like how within the first 20 seconds of the opening, as soon as they show Jill inside with the room with the film reels, they instantly play the Godfather theme.
Yeah.
I was thinking, well, that took about 10 seconds of the Sicily season.
I mean, I know we joked a lot last season that they were basically just doing the US set season to pander to us, and everything they were doing was just for us. But Gilles' response to that was, no, you're just as big movie nerds as we are. And I would have been very disappointed in them if they'd done an entire episode in Sicily without at least referencing The Godfather.
Yeah.
I mean, the first suit that Jill wears on the yacht, I'm thinking, how hard is he trying to be Vito Corleone here?
I also love how we're actually calling him Jill, because there's a bit of ambiguity about his nickname this season. Is he still going to be Papa Bear? Or, as we've brainstormed on the Bothers Bar Discord over the past few weeks, is he, given it's set in Italy, going to be Pasta Bear this season? Or could we even go one step further and call him Papa Orso for the season, given that's the Italian for Papa Bear?
Or God, the God Bear?
Well, no, we have the reserved nickname to do with Godfather, because technically this season we are Podfathers.
It's a shame they didn't do the seasons the other way around, because if they'd done Sicily first and then Gracie, could have been Papa Uzo.
Very true. It is only right in an episode that ends with a direct reference to the Grease season, I think, to actually look a few years down the line. Do we still want to call him Papa Bear? Do we want to go for Papa Orso? Do we want to call him Pasta Bear? Or maybe just all three, interchangeably, until I start getting emails off him.
I think the more nicknames he has, the better. It's like Babe Ruth in baseball, right? The King of Crash, the Sultan of SWAT.
If I don't get an email off in this season just with the subject line nicknames, I think we will have failed in our jobs. The cast this season, I know everyone loves to find out, the average age is actually quite old. It's 35.8, which puts it very close to the off-brand Courtiers line, compared to 38.3 in Argentina, 33.4 in South Africa, 37.7 for Mexico, 35.1 for Vietnam, 34.6 for Greece, 31.9 before the Jens and Noah swap, and 33.3 for Germany, 34.6 and 34.3 for Canary Islands, and 33.4 and 33.6 for Arizona. So it's the oldest cast they've done for a long while.
What was that, since Mexico?
Yeah, only two seasons are older than this. Mexico is the most recent one that was older than this. And it's smidge under 2 years older on average.
And this cast doesn't have anybody that was quite as old, but they don't have anybody this season that's super young either. So it's a very narrow deviation of age.
Yeah, it's 26 to 54, I think it was.
Oh, that's how old Philippe is, okay.
Whatever Philippe was, I think he was 54.
Yeah, so it's not a huge gap.
Although we have two grandfathers this season.
We do, and one of them's only 41. And it was sort of snuck into the dialogue, but by the look of things, he had his first kid at 11.
Whoa!
He said that his oldest kid was 30, and he's 41.
Shit.
How does that... That's not possible. Is that bad to be a translation mistake?
I don't think it was. I think the less we say about that, the better.
I was thinking, there's no good way to respond to that.
Yeah, because in some jurisdictions, that is not necessarily legal. The episode.
How do we just transition from that? Like, okay.
So we begin the episode in Cala Tibiano with Papa Bear speaking to the mole. He says, "Hello, mole. How are you doing?"
Very good.
Oh, wait, you're playing as an innocent candidate. Are you actually the mole? Everyone says they aren't the mole. And now, honestly, are you the mole?
Yes, I am the mole.
I thought so. That lying is going well.
Absolutely.
Ready?
Yes.
Andiamo. Gilles just, you know, showing off his infinite knowledge of Italian there.
I'm just surprised it wasn't. Let's-a-go!
Here we go!
Yeah, if you're not careful, Jill will be dubbed over by Chris Pratt. There is a real danger of that. In October, 10 strangers travelled to the largest island in the Mediterranean, Sicily, a journey full of surprises and questions, and among them, a saboteur, the mole. And Papa Bear obviously poses on the front of a yacht. He greets everyone for the first time, they're almost in Sicily, and can set foot on land with lots of money in the pot already, up to €10,000. However, he is sitting at the table all alone. Four of them are hanging off each side of the boat. One is on the mast, and one is trapped on a dinghy being pulled by the boat.
I wish during the challenge they would just cut to Jill just digging into his meal and really savouring it.
Just trying to make small talk with his mouthful.
I mean, did Jill actually sit there for the entire hour?
He has a soccer ball on the chair next to him, just talking to it.
Just doing Sudoku on his phone.
He's got himself a subscription for this season just for when people really bore him.
Yeah, or he's probably watching the Italian soccer league on his phone.
Yeah, he can't wait to see Real Madrid play.
Yeah, I remember when I was in Italy. Yeah, I went to Italy's capital of Madrid. It was quite the interesting place with everyone speaking Spanish there.
I don't know how much you guys know, but Gilles' new day job is basically in the slot that Mole usually is in for the rest of the year. He hosts a sports show now. He's always been involved in the football world, but he actually has a football show on Veer now.
Huh.
I bet he loved that answer already.
Well, that's why they had like the bubble soccer challenge. What was that, in Germany when they did bubble soccer?
Yeah. So a few weeks ago, they were all asked whether they wanted to be the Mole. Everyone who said yes is on the boat. Those who didn't say yes are on the other boat. Each person who sits at the table in an hour with a mole book in their hand earns €1,000 for the pot. When they created this challenge, do you think that they expected only one person to say no?
It's tough to say with Jill's sense of humor.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, because it seems like something he would do just to mess with the audience, saying, hey, there's one person who is singled out. That person couldn't possibly be the mole, right, everybody?
Because last time we saw a challenge like this, it was the very opening challenge of Argentina, where they were initially split up into the groups between who said yes and who said no.
So you think it was just a parody of that to go from two groups of five to a group of nine and a group of one?
Well, Bindles and I were discussing this a little bit earlier before I'd even watched the subbed version of this episode, because I did watch it unsubbed on Sunday. I think the theme of this episode was paying tribute to those that have gone before. Because you have the Argentina reference, not only with the split between do you want to be the mole, yes and no, but also them hanging off the side into the water is something that was done in the premiere of Argentina. You have loads and loads of references to the other reboot seasons, chock full in this episode. Most of them are a bit more subtle, but then obviously we end with the Greece tribute of Pandora's Box's return.
And we also had the Canary Islands tribute of drench a surface with something really slippery and see if anyone breaks their leg and needs to be medically evacuated before the end of the first episode.
I mean, that wasn't the Canary Islands reference that we had written down, but yes, I will accept it.
Because I was thinking, if this was Canary Islands, we would have lost at least two of the olive pickers right on the spot there.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah,
somebody shattered their tibia and another person dislocated their elbow.
And the volcano erupted, and then...
Yeah. One person gets drenched in lava.
This challenge obviously ends with the diving, which was something that was done in South Africa. Mexico, as Bindle's reminding me, began with Jill doing his opening speech to the cast before an If Only You Were Here reveal. Vietnam with the You May tablets from the original selection.
Right.
Greece, you know, the whole box. Germany, the set up for the third challenge with Jill in the office was almost picture perfect to the Germany Integrity Will Be Rewarded set up.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of too. I was thinking, yeah, all we need is Leonard.
It was almost identically set up, including the projector and everything. They did the old school projector effect again. Canary Islands was obviously the cuckoo clock, and Arizona was people watching the reaction videos from episode 2 last year. So there was a tribute or an element of...
every single one?
Of every single reboot season in this premiere alone. I do have a theory on why they did it. And it goes back to actually something I discussed with Jill at the finale last year. I think it's an element of them trying to reclaim the back catalogue from the terrible Netflix mole versions.
Hmm.
Because a lot of the stuff that they copied from previous reboot seasons was stuff that was also done in Netflix Mole.
Oh.
And I'm mainly thinking of Integrity Will Be Rewarded and the aspects surrounding that. So I think it's a very interesting choice if that was deliberate.
Yeah, I was going to say they didn't bury the Netflix Mole cast alive as much as we wanted them to.
No. But in terms of the theme of this, I think this episode was very much a paying tribute to the seasons that have gone before it, whether deliberately or not.
I think there's one in the preview for next week that's a take on the first Italy season from the OG version as well.
Yeah, yeah, you did mention that earlier. The car puzzle.
Yeah, is that the? Yeah, I saw that. That's been used in a lot of mole versions.
So they are split up into three life jacket colours, which is blue, red, and yellow. The blue life jackets are Stephanie, Senna, Lolo, and Bernard. The red jackets are Coco Gillian, Mikhail, and Caroline. And Lynn and Philippe are the yellow jackets. Philippe is atop the mast, and he said yes, but Lynn is in the dinghy because she said no.
I wish Lynn's dinghy was about an extra kilometer or two away from the main boat. That would have made it a lot funnier.
I'm intrigued as to what the save Lynn aspects would have been of this. Obviously, they are terrible at quiz questions, so she just sits there in the dinghy for an hour. But she seemed to also be attached to the dinghy. She was attached by the wrist.
Hmm.
Yeah, we never find out how she was supposed to get to the main boat, right? All we knew is that Philippe was just going to be lowered until he could unclip himself and join everybody else. But yeah, even though they had 80 minutes, they still had to cut some things for time, but I guess they just didn't want to explain that because it was extremely irrelevant to the challenge.
Yeah, the dinghy was attached to the back of the boat by the time they all reunited. I spotted that. So Lynn is the first person we get introduced to as well. She wanted to be the person who ensures everyone contributes to the pot. She watched last season and enjoyed it that everyone seemed to contribute, apart from, you know, the person who was sabotaging. She's a 38-year-old videographer, and she says she doesn't like to lie, so wouldn't want to be the mole.
Did she say that she wants to earn 1 million hearts?
She did not, and that has been very fun on Survivor. Obviously not watching it, but I am aware of the online discourse that is surrounding...
Banu.
Him, yeah.
I couldn't imagine Banu on Belgia.
I did see someone comparing to Princess Diana earlier, which I thought was maybe a step too far.
What? How to Princess Diana?
Because she was self-described princess of our hearts. She wanted to be the people's princess. And I just think that that's potentially in not great taste.
Sounds borderline blasphemous.
Although not the most blasphemous thing in this episode. I did also note down the boat number because, you know, they love sneaking clues like that in. So it's 1MZ438DX. It's definitely the sort of thing they'd use as a clue. They did focus on it a lot, so I'm presuming it isn't, but I'm just going to, you know, flag it now. The red jackets must introduce themselves for a minute with a 2-second buffer. Only when all four of them complete it will they be released. Interesting challenge, I would say.
Hmm.
Is that where the mole would be? Or would the mole want to make sure they're on the boat to press the red button as quickly as they can?
Yeah, that's the ultimate dilemma, because obviously this is a very rare episode where you guys don't know my suspicions, and I don't know your suspicions, because usually you send yours in our chat orders. We have no idea who each other suspects. I am leaning towards... the mole's best tactic, as is identified later in this episode, as get onto the boat and earn some money to win trust, I think. But I can certainly see the argument for them being in the just a minute group.
It's tough because if you're at the button, you're controlling how much money can go into the pot. Like, yes, you can earn some money, but you're making sure that not all money can go in there.
Yeah. And if I had a pound for every mole season that we'd covered... which starts its first episode with a challenge that gives away a ludicrous amount of money, far more than they usually do when it's €1,000 per person. I would have two in a row here, which is very worrying. Because Vidim did exactly the same thing with the exemption swap.
But I'm under the impression that they're not going to then try their best to drain the pot repeatedly for every single episode for the rest of the season.
No, I think they are certainly generous in this episode. I think you said it was the most money that had been earned in a Belgian premiere, Bindles.
Yep, so the previous record was 8,000 in South Africa. This one is 8,800. And then we've got the doublers coming later this season. So I'm assuming there is some sort of pot drain mechanic coming. But because it's Belgium, I trust them to get it right.
Yeah, my hatred of pot drains is quite well known, but also, having said that, this is again the sort of thing where I go, yeah, don't do it again, Jill. So if they do it, I won't be necessarily surprised, but I will probably roll my eyes a fair bit.
And with Belgium too, the one time they did the major pot drain, it was worthy because A, the contestants were sabotaging themselves, and B, absolutely nobody was onto the mole, and I think it's a worthy punishment that if nobody in the group is onto the mole should exploit that as much as possible in a challenge like that, where it's like, okay, you've had 5 or 6 episodes to be onto Leonard. You deserve to lose that 10K, especially when he deducts 10K and you're still not onto him.
Yeah. Going back to this challenge, I think it's certainly easier for the mole if they're in the red or blue jacket positions. I don't think as a mole you want to stand out necessarily at the start of the season by being either in the dinghy or on the mast.
Was I the only one that laughed way too hard at Philip just spinning around on the mast, not being able to become steady?
It's just so... It's such a good visual of the oldest person in this cast being attached to the mast and just kind of dangling there while his raspberries turn purple or whatever he said. Hazelnuts.
Yeah. He was like that girl from The Simpsons who is on the rings when all of the teachers go on strike. And she's like, Miss Hoover, I'd like to get down now. That's all I was thinking with Philippe being stuck on the mast.
Mr. DaCosta.
Joe DaCosta, I'd like to get down now.
I did like that they didn't. It seemed like they didn't warn him when the rope was being lowered. So he just sort of just drops a meter straight away and he's still got his legs on the thing.
So Coco's our second introduction. Drama is her thing. She has to say what she thinks and does. She's a 31-year-old intensive care nurse and has been living in Belgium for 6 years, and she speaks for 57 seconds and therefore fails her challenge. Philippe and Lynn get quiz questions and must alternate answers until they get 5 correct for each question. Each completed question lowers Philippe a meter from the mast, and after 5 questions, he'll be able to reach the deck and free Lynn. And their first question is to name 5 countries that border Italy. And all I have to say is thank God it's not Switzerland, or Cruise Quiz Host Everywhere would pitch a fit.
Yeah, at least the one they missed was San Marino or Vatican. That can be forgiven.
I think I've told the story on the podcast about when a Cruise Quiz Host argued with me and my brother about how many countries border Switzerland. But if I haven't, she tried doing a question that was which 2 countries border Switzerland.
Right, I remember that story now.
Yeah, and it's at least 5. They get Switzerland, Slovenia, Austria, and France, but Lynn can't think of San Marino or the Vatican City, and instead says Croatia, and she says she's a really bad quizzer, which makes her perfect for this position. Philippe is the third person introduced. He's a 53-year-old business manager and says he's now the leader of a group where people look up to him. He faces pressure regularly and just has to stay calm, and he also says all the things that he touches work out.
I hear he faces a lot of pressure regularly, especially so far on the mole, where he faces a lot of pressure on his hazelnuts.
And their second question is to name teams in Serie A. In Serie A, I should say. Do it the proper Italian pronunciation. And Philippe immediately says Real Madrid, which is Spanish and not Italian.
I think if Marta had heard that, I think she would have just killed him on the spot right there.
Well, if you listen very carefully in the background, you can just hear Papa Virgil da Costa hitting his head repeatedly on the table.
Yeah, you just hear the table just snap in half.
For fuck's sake, Philippe!
Hot word, Dama, Philippe!
The Blue Jackets have to hang 10 objects with the 10 people to free themselves. Once all 10 are matched to their people, all 4 of them will drop into the water. And Bernard immediately claims his bike. He's a 33-year-old teacher working in primary education. He was once doing a lesson about oceans and continents, and the child came up to him and said that learning can actually be quite fun.
And then the student said, yeah, learning can be quite fun, but not in your classroom, Bernard.
Psych!
Gotcha!
Obviously, I don't know your suspicions. Have you actually got Bernard anywhere above, like, 9th?
Not much further above 9th.
I do.
Interesting. We'll get to that at the end. I'm fascinated to hear some reasoning. So their 4 objects get hung correctly, but they still have 6 to go. And Coco manages to do her just a minute speech by getting 58 seconds, and Gillian is the next to try. He is a 27-year-old technical draftsman and considers himself a bit of a messiah of Houlihan. He does compare himself to Jesus, which I'm sure went down really well in a Catholic country like Belgium.
What's a Houlihan?
I think it's a town.
Yeah, it's presumably the town where he was born. He doesn't live there anymore because his girlfriend stole him away from Houlihan.
Why the hashtag Messiah of Houlihan? And why does he look like Noah's older brother?
Is that your official description for him?
Yeah, that's part of it. Am I the only one who thinks that? He looks a lot like Noah's older brother.
He does, yes.
The one brother who can sneak Noah into a bar.
He also manages to get to 57 seconds, but then his second attempt is 59 when he just talks about how great Houlihan is and how everyone should go there.
Yeah, that's gonna be on our itinerary, Michael.
I'm not going to feckin' Houlihan.
Why not? You don't want to meet the Messiah?
He's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy.
You two can be the hooligans of Houlihan.
The hooligans of Houlihan, yeah. I think Jillian refers to them as disciples.
So with 40 minutes left, Lynn and Philippe still have made no progress whatsoever. Their third question is to take turns naming a Belgian coastal town, and they get four again before Philippe messes up yet again. And I'm sure production at this point were just going, seriously, how many questions do we actually have on flags? Do we need to start running the same ones again? Because they're not going to get them.
I thought for sure they were going to get the Belgian coastal towns. I feel like that's something you should know if you live in a country as small as Belgium.
Yeah, and also, one of the missing ones, I can definitely think of off the top of my head. Zeebrugge. And I've been there quite a few times. They did, thankfully, get Ostend off of LOL Racing the week before we were actually there. But yeah, Zeebrugge is the obvious one they missed there, I think, for me.
Yeah.
Mikael is the third to give his speech. He only has one ball, as a few years ago he had testicular cancer, and his entire interview is about his testicles. He's a 41-year-old tree surgeon, and he talks so much about his scrotum that he goes 6 seconds over his limit.
Can I just say, I resent the fact that I'm going to have to be very, very particular with my words when I'm thirsting over him all season, because I know you're going to edit it out of context.
I would never do such a thing when I have Michelle saying such luminary quotes as, "She's a bit of all right, as your English people would say." Genuine Hunted quote from last week. Oh, Michelle is an absolute delight on Hunted this series. And if you're not watching Hunted, still listen to the podcast, because Michelle is very much in her evening energy phase, I think is the best way to describe it. We've been recording evenings for her, and it's working out perfectly.
Oh, wonderful.
You don't get that luxury, but Michelle does.
No, I have to wake up at the ungodly hour of 9 a.m.
I know. How could you? To be fair, I had to do the same thing for Hunted yesterday. So I feel your pain. And I am also slightly obsessed this season already with the fact that the photos that they use for the blue team's task are done like 80s yearbook style. Yeah. They do use them again later in the episode, but they haven't released those photos. Those are just for the episodes. The official cast photos are them in the white suits, but the sort of very soft focus and very 80s yearbook style, and I'm here for it. It's a delightful sight gag every time they use it.
Oh my God, those white suit photos, I looked at them and I genuinely thought Gillian was trans, because like none of them, the suit doesn't look like it fits anybody. But then when you've got the suit plus the weird filters or whatever they're using to make it a little bit filmy, Gillian kind of looks a little bit like a woman.
One thing, I don't know if anybody else is disturbed by this, but the only two contestants who talk about their genitalia excessively are the two grandpas in the cast. Why are we learning about both grandpas' genitalia? I think that number should stay at zero.
I am also disappointed we didn't find out how old Philippe's oldest child was, because, you know, we do need to compare between him and Mikael now. We need those stats.
I don't even know how to follow the...
I love how you guys are just not touching the fact that Mikael had a kid at 11.
Yeah, I mean, it's either that or I'm going to make a probably some sort of inappropriate joke of him being a testicular amputee. So, moving on.
Mikael did teach us about the fact that apparently if you have a ball removed, your other one grows larger to compensate, so he sort of has a mega ball now.
I mean, to be fair, it's not unusual.
It's like a lottery jackpot. It's the mega ball.
And your bonus ball has left.
You know who would love to have a doubler?
Oh, Saunders, there we go. I was waiting for you to come up with an inappropriate joke about it.
He Mikhail, I think if anybody deserved to have a doubler, I think it would be Mikhail's testicles.
I'm going to get so many inappropriate emails off Papa Bear for this. And let's be honest, so are you. He'll probably go to you first for that. So the fourth question for Philippe and Lynn is to name countries whose name ends in IE in Flemish. And they get Italy, Serbia, Croatia, Belgium, and Namibia. And Philippe finally drops before spinning, hanging off the mast at 4 meters high. The Blue Jackets only need two more, but swap Caroline and Mikhail to get a perfect 10 and drop. We also find out that Mikhail is also a granddad. His item was not his child's chair, but his grandchild's chair. And they drop with a little under 33 minutes left. To reveal the location of the mole books, they must press a big red button, but when they press it, they cannot earn any money for those still left stuck in their original positions. And it's Charlotte and Stephanie who want to press, but Bernard convinces them to wait a little bit longer. Charlotte is a 26-year-old pharmacist and met her boyfriend at a lockdown party, which, I'll tell you guys now, went down really well on social media.
I was about to say, I was thinking, has everyone just said it's been 4 years since we had all of those lockdowns, or is everyone just going to just be copacetic and cool with it and not really care too much?
I think it's fair to say that this did cause a little bit of a stink from what I've heard.
I guess the fact that she works as a pharmacist probably added that in for a stronger reaction, the fact that she works in the healthcare field.
Yeah, I'm sure as an ex-pharmacist, you really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
As Thomas off of the suspect list said, my Dutch friend says I really dislike Charlotte. She's in pharmaceutics and is proudly saying she met her boyfriend at a lockdown party and didn't see him again until they had to go to court / the police or whatnot. But €250, the fine, was worth a great relationship. What a tremendous dickhead. It caused a little bit of a stink on social media, I think it's fair to say.
Well, when you think about how a lot of people spent lockdown by, you know, locking down. I didn't even know they called it a lockdown party. That sounds like a contradiction.
Well, they couldn't really call it a clandestine party, could they? Which is what it actually was. So yeah, she's a 26-year-old pharmacist and met her boyfriend at a lockdown party. It sounds like a cliche, but she'd never felt a connection like it before. She spent the rest of the evening with him until the police intervened, and she didn't see him again until they went to court and she got fined €250.
One thing to also note, that would have been 4 years ago, so she would have, I mean, there's a bit of a change between when you're 22 and when you're 26, typically. So that's why I was a little bit more lenient, where it's like, yeah, that's quite, I could see being 22 and just saying, why am I locking down? These are supposed to be the best years of my life. Best social years.
Also, if I anonymized that and told you it was the youngest person in this cast, you probably would believe me.
Based on the story of how she met her partner, yeah, that wouldn't be...
So the fifth question is to name a letter that isn't in the Flemish for low-cost shipping company. And despite being able to see the word written down, Philippe says G and they fail yet again. He has literally got the advantage here.
That sounds like something an old person would do.
Yeah. And if I anonymized that and told you it was the oldest person in the cast who'd done that, you'd probably still believe me.
Yep.
Just like, the letters are right in front of him and he still screws it up. I can't even take that as the most sabotage. Just old people do that regularly on the daily.
He just didn't have his reading glasses on. That's all it was.
Yeah. Oh, it was a G, not a Q. Oh.
They were going to have to get to the point where the little flag said, name a word on this card, and they still would have struggled.
Name one of Gilles Dacosta's five nicknames in this season.
But they only got one out of five questions right. I think if I was aware of that, and I'm waiting to press the button and Jill says, hey, by the way, these are the questions they've got, and they've only passed one out of five questions, I'm thinking, it's going to take them a long time to get Philippe all the way down. We're pressing that button right now.
Yeah, they were right to press it before Philippe could get down. I'm not sure they were right to press it before the Red Jackets could get down.
As soon as I'm being told, hey, this guy was told to name Italian soccer teams and he picked Madrid, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not confident in him being able to put together a string of answers to anything.
Caroline takes over from Mikhail and does it in 61 seconds to become the third Red Jacket to succeed. And in 1997, she made a stupid mistake. She was standing on the windowsill of a townhouse and fell off and didn't walk again for a year. She was told she would always walk with a limp, and she's a 46-year-old audiologist. The Blue Jackets agree to wait 2 more minutes, but Mikhail again talks for 57 seconds. And his final attempt is 52 seconds as the button is pushed and the other 6 are all eliminated. Stephanie, Senna, Charlotte and Bernard find out that the mole books are 4 meters below the boat hanging on a line, and also on the line are 3 question marks. Each person can only claim 1 mole book, but they can claim as many question marks as they want. Interesting all around.
Yeah.
Bernard is the first to dive with 19 minutes left on the clock. He immediately goes for a question mark before getting his mole book, and he doesn't tell them that he grabbed the book and grabs a 2nd question mark before surfacing. Also, I would hazard a guess that Bernard does a lot of swimming because he had professional swimwear on and everyone else is just in swim shorts. He was wearing proper swim jammers.
Funny thing with Senna is that, I know it's like a traditional Belgian name, but in Canada, if you go into a pharmacy and you ask for Senna tabs, it's used to treat constipation.
Yeah, I was going to say Senacot is the UK one. That's constipation relief. He is the 2nd to dive and also goes for a question mark. And he says that when he plays games with people that he likes, he warns them to keep an eye on him because he will cheat to win. He's a 28-year-old social worker, and he feels bad if he wins by cheating, but he gets caught up in the game. He admits that he grabbed a question mark. Unsurprisingly, Bernard does not. Charlotte is the 3rd to dive, and she struggles a bit more, and she does eventually get one. And Gilles then confirms to us that the question marks aren't exemptions or passfragen, there's something else. Bernard is then forced to admit that he got a question mark, as Charlotte spotted that it was missing when she dived.
Who was it who responded, you know, what's that with, oh, those are question marks, like that answered everything?
Yeah. Those are question marks?
Yeah, keep up. It's a question mark.
Yeah.
It's kind of common.
Yeah. A lot of languages use them.
I did like the implication in here at one point that players who don't go down and get their journals don't get their journals. And like, as far as, you know, rules that the show could bend and break and all that sort of stuff, I kind of really like that idea. And I wish they did it.
I also like that Gilles did say, yeah, they're stuck with whichever mole book they pick out the sea. And then immediately as soon as the other 6 are handed out, everyone just starts swapping the colours anyway because they want a particular colour. Stephanie's the last to dive.
The Wilhelm scream. Did you catch the Wilhelm scream when she dove into the water?
Yes, I did. It's our favourite thing to spot. I'm sure it was put in there just for our amusement.
Wow!
She's the last one to dive, and she's a 35-year-old nurse with 1 foot that swims vertically and 1 that swims horizontally. Why has everyone got a weird backstory on this season?
Did it also happen in 1997?
I don't know, but apparently it's a superpower because she can swim fast with it. And she headbutts the boat, to which Bernard spots it and winces, which is very funny, before realizing the best tactic, which is to grab onto the rope and use it to pull yourself down. With a little under 12 minutes left, she does grab her book.
And then we get to the moliest part of the whole challenge. A lot of time left on the, or pardon me, just that Jill says, you still had over 9 minutes, guys. I'm like, well, what are you doing there? As if he's trying to say, like, something happened, but you gotta figure out what happened.
So they were sort of touch and go with that timing, whether the Red Jackets would have all been able to get it. Because there was 19 minutes left on the clock when Bernard dived, and it was a little over 9 minutes when they all got to the table. So if they'd waited for the Red Jackets to get there as well, there would have been a chance of them missing the table, I think.
Yes, and there's no guarantee that they would have been able to, because it's still a full minute, a little over a minute each time to reintroduce yourself if you miss.
Yeah.
Plus 2 minutes for each time that Mikhail goes, because he has to talk about his testicles or his testicle for an extra minute going over each time as well. So all it would take would just be 3 or 4 failed introductions, and they probably don't get any money at all in this challenge. So pressing the button, even though there's a lot of time left on the clock, it wasn't as big of a blunder as Jill necessarily made it out to be.
You're also forgetting that if Mikhail had got himself free and dove into the water, he would have had the inherent disadvantage of his massive ball acting as a flotation device. he wouldn't have been able to dive down that easily with it.
Although, to be fair, if the second group had to do it, there wouldn't have been any doublers left for them to collect, so it would have been a bit faster.
Yeah, but also the two fastest guys picked them up anyway. I think we actually find out that between Senna and Bernard, they took about 3 minutes between them, even though they picked up five things between them. It's also deeply ironic that we're making jokes about Mikhail's ball, given that, you know, he's a tree surgeon. It's more likely we would have talked about his trunk.
I mean, he's a tree surgeon, but I've got some wood he can operate on.
There we go. Thank you.
You're welcome, bingo people.
They reach the table with more than 9 minutes left, as Saunders says, with four books and all three question marks, 200 Bernard's protection. He claims it was just because he knew Charlotte and Stephanie would struggle, but they think that he was being selfish, probably correctly. The other six that they eliminated then come to the table and are introduced. Caroline doesn't even introduce herself before asking about the question marks. And Philippe does claim that his hazelnuts are purple now because he was hanging off the mast for 12 hours.
Why was he up there all day?
He wasn't.
Miss Hoover.
I do wonder about the logistics of, you know, getting them all on a boat blindfolded and saying, yeah, Philippe, just, you know, let us harness you up and we're going to pull you up to the top of the mast. I do wonder about that. And how long he actually was up there, but I don't think it was probably more than about 5 or 10 minutes. He would most likely have been one of the last people attached, I suspect.
Yeah.
They also receive their books, and everyone chooses their colours, and Papa Bear confirms that they've earned 4,000 euros of 10,000 for the challenge. And whilst they sail to the coast of Sicily, they will be eating and drinking aboard the boat.
I was thinking, there was a lot of wine being poured. I was half expecting them to wake up on the boat on day two and Jill saying, okay, guys, after all of that wine, you guys had a wild night. Once again, your mole book somehow all got under the boat and you're going to have to swim under the boat to retrieve them once again.
So once they dock, they drive from Milazzo to Calatabiano, where they will be staying in the shadow of Mount Etna. Obviously, Gillian talks about his hometown yet again, and they are staying in some sort of cat hotel. And it seems that, I think it was Stephanie, does not like cats. She ends up checking under her bed before she goes onto it that there's no cats hiding there.
And Carolyn, as soon as she's introduced, all I'm thinking is, she can't remember the names of the other contestants. I'm not very optimistic about her surviving this first execution.
Yeah, skipping ahead to the end of the episode, she is my prediction to go home next week.
Yeah, she also behaved the least moliest out of everybody this episode.
It's like when Celebrity Big Brother had Jackie Stallone on, and they went to go and do nominations, and then they asked her, you know, who do you nominate first? And she's like, oh, I don't know their names, dear.
I do also love that even though Saunders has never seen UK Big Brother, he still knows Yeah Bracky.
I've heard like the impression a million times over the past 10 years, Bracky.
Yeah, Bracky. It's one of the best moments of British television ever.
And that is not how anyone expected a Stallone reference to be made this season.
Nope. So everyone ends day one by wondering what the mystery question marks means and how it will affect them. Passfragen are round, Freistellingen are square. So what are the hexagons?
I like how they're just all obsessed over the specific hexagon shape. Like, oh my god, It's not a square, it's not a circle, it's a hexagon. What could that mean? Just breaking down the, like, what do hexagons represent? What do we associate with hexagons?
I would love it if after, you know, we all spent weeks speculating about what the number two meant, whether it's, you know, the second person introduced or whatever. It turns out it's because it's the hexagon, it's the sixth person introduced instead, which feels like the sort of thing they would do.
Yeah. Also, from our point of view, they are not hexagons, they're hexagons. Because hexagon!
Hexagon!
We stopped doing that at the end of it, and you know, I think it needs a return.
It does.
Especially for those who only listen to Belgium Mole and have no idea where that came from. And to be honest, neither do we.
I wish, you know what I was really hoping that would happen if Gillian stuck around a bit longer, is if on the quiz, on the final question, who is the mole? It's just the instead of his name, it's just the Messiah of Gullahem. rather than his actual name, and then just to have Carolyn be really confused taking the quiz, like, who the hell is the Messiah?
I did like somebody speculating that, you know, maybe it's just a big hoax and they're like two chocolates or something. And then my thought was, you know, don't be stupid. They've already done a mole season in Mexico and nobody would ever be dumb enough to go back there for a second.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, that's just hack work. It's tacky.
Yeah.
Yeah, tacky.
Tacky.
So it's day two in Sicily, and they drive to a village on the slopes of Mount Etna for breakfast, disturbing the locals with their music. Love the edit. I'm presuming the music actually wasn't blaring out.
Yeah, so with Gloria?
I do like that the soundtrack this season appears to be Italo Disco.
It's definitely our level already. And with their coffee, Philippe tells them that he's developed a new role since being on the show. He left Belgium as a father and arrived in Sicily as a grandfather, and he brought chocolates to celebrate them.
I'm glad he said that instead of, like, saying he's a professional hitman or assassin.
See, it's really mean because in the trailers that we had seen for this season, they did focus a lot on Philippe saying, oh, I've got another role. Because obviously another role has been the thing that has sort of been teased for this season, and the real question of who is the role has just perpetuated all throughout the season. And now, yeah, it's just a blink and you'll miss it joke, basically, of, oh yeah, I'm now a grandfather.
He's not even the first grandfather introduced, so it's just like, oh well, that's not special. We already have another grandfather. And trying to find a unique beat for yourself, Philippe.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not the first grandfather. He's not the first person to talk about his nuts. I mean, what's left?
One nut is left.
One mega nut.
It's like a, what is this? Like the mega leg from newer seasons of Amazing Race? Just mega nut.
It's just two nuts that fuse together.
It's a pointless renaming of testicular cancer. It's just mega nut disease. So Jill meets him in the town square where a folk dance is going on, and it happens when the harvest season's going on, and luckily it's just coming to an end. Four of the candidates will do the harvesting by picking olives, while the other six will perform the dance. And the six dancers get a lesson in the Ballad de Cordelia before performing it in pairs later on. Whilst they perform their dance, they must pay attention to colours attached on bracelets to other dancers, and if they see more than one of the same colour, they must knock over a wooden block with that colour. The four olive pluckers, which is Gillian, Caroline, Senna and Stephanie, must do just that, pluck olives. They have 3 minutes to harvest olives and place them in bins of the same colours that the dancers could knock over. To know which barrel to place them in, they must answer a question about one of the dancers, and only the olives in the correct barrel will count and be worth €1,000 per kilogram. A million olive drop, if you will. And I will also say, I did write that line before Briggs said exactly the same thing in the Discord.
An olive plucker sounds like what either a cable airing of a movie or what like a really religious person would say to avoid using profanity. Like, oh, you olive plucker.
Ah, you olive plucker.
I'm not an olive plucker, I'm an olive plucker's son.
I think Vindles and I just did the same joke.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
I'm not an olive plucker, I'm an olive plucker's son. It's based on pheasant plucker. I'm not a pheasant plucker, I'm a pheasant plucker's son. The worrying thing is this, like, Bindles and I have only done 49 episodes together here. And we're still that much in sync.
I'm seeing In Sync next week, actually, in concert.
Are you?
Yeah.
Is Justin Timberlake going to be with them?
No. It's only one-fifth of them. Guess it's one member of In Sync. It's just In. I'm sure you could probably guess who's going to be the In Sync person I'll be seeing in concert.
Is it Joey Fatone?
It's not Fatone.
Lance Bass.
It's not Lance Bass.
JC?
It's not JC.
So it's the other one who no one
it's
can remember.
The other one, yes. It's the other one. It's the one who God. Eminem disses.
Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah. Oh, I'm disappointed in both of you. The correct answer we were looking for was Chris Kirkpatrick.
Ah, of
Chris
course
Kirkpatrick.
It was.
Chris Kirkpatrick, you can get your ass kicked. Moby.
So the first question is about Mikhail. And they must place the olives in the barrel of the body part that he's lost. It's actually the animal he's most afraid of, which is either rats, jellyfish, sharks, wasps, snakes, or all five of them. The dancers don't know what the question is, but can still eliminate the answers. They eliminate all of the above, and then Coco also eliminates snakes and goes for wasps, but accidentally takes jellyfish with her, where all the olives already were. And Mikhail eliminates rats right at the last second, leaving just sharks, but it was actually jellyfish, so they earn no money.
I just love that when they were explaining the question, they'd put it over a shot of Michael sort of bouncing in place as part of the dance. There was a sort of shot that would get an American show picketed by fundamentalists.
And just to note there, it'd be just like with some of the challenges during Venom this season, where they clearly did the dance first, and then the olive picking took place after the dance was all over and done with, so that they knew when the barrels would be tipped over during the olive challenge.
Yeah, Gilles said that it was early afternoon when they met in the town square, but it was very much not early afternoon when they all met up at the end of the Olive Grove challenge. So yes, it almost certainly was.
Yeah. Belgian Mole can do a lot of things, but that would be pretty damn hard to do.
Yeah. I'm more interested as to work out how the hell they tipped over the barrels in the first place, because there was no visible mechanism.
Just a really thin rope that a producer would yank on?
Yeah, I assume so.
It might have been magnets, maybe, or some sort of lever device under the barrels that they had creative camera angles on, but yeah, it was very impressively done, because I still don't exactly know how they did it.
I wish it would have happened while somebody was tipping something into the barrel that was about to fall over to see if they could get the contestant to fall into the barrel that was tipping over.
There was a jump scare at one point. I think it was with Gillian. One of the barrels flips as he's just standing there and he gets shit scared by it.
The Messiah was pouring olives into the fish barrel.
He was turning olives into gold. I'm going to hell for this episode. It's the perfect episode to talk about on Holy Week.
If you're going to hell, what's going to happen to me?
Well, exactly. Last Belgian premiere was called Welcome to Gay Death. It's just the natural evolution that you went to hell last season and now I'm going to hell. So the second question is about Charlotte, asking where she met her boyfriend. The options are in a supermarket, on a plane, at Machu Picchu, in a car accident, at a taekwondo lesson, or at a lockdown party. And as we know, it is a lockdown party.
And Carolyn knew this 100%.
She did indeed. And I'll also point out that Charlotte's dancing is the banner this week, because it made me laugh more than anything else in this episode that I could actually screen grab. Because it looks like a screen grab from the horror film Midsommar. It's got that really, like, properly soft focus Nordic energy that did make me laugh. I do have some friends who do a film podcast who are obsessed with the film Midsommar, so I'm very much aware of the aesthetic of that film. And yeah, this reminded me of it a lot. Charlotte eliminates Plain, and then Caroline knows it's a lockdown party, and Charlotte eliminates White and nearly everything else at the same time as she just kind of shoves the blocks. Charlotte and Philippe think they saw the colour yellow twice, which is the lockdown party one, but run out of time to eliminate it, and luckily for them they didn't eliminate it, as it was the correct answer and has a full bucket, thanks to Caroline knowing the answer. Now we get to the round that made me send you guys a message going, this fucking show. Because for the last dance, Papamoe makes it a little bit harder by turning the sprinklers on, full of olive oil.
Of course.
All we needed was some spinach.
The sprinklers alone made me laugh. And then when they started spraying out, I went, that's not water. And then he says, naturally, in Sicily, we're not putting water in there, we're putting olive oil in there. And I'm just like, this is so silly anyway. It's such a brilliantly bonkers aesthetic for this show, as always. But it has the added consequences we find out later in the episode of their clothes are ruined by the olive oil. And it's day two. Like, these four people, arguably one of them goes home pretty early, but the three people who remain are going to be stinking of olive oil for, let's be honest, the next 3 weeks. There is no way they're getting it out of their clothes. Especially as they don't even give them a proper washing machine to use.
Well, that's why it's the following day, right, where we see, I think, Senna and Carolyn around just like three big bottles of laundry detergent. I think it's to get all of the olive oil out.
Well, it is. They say that, but they just give them a bucket to do it with. And it's like, yeah, deal with it yourself. You're not getting a washing machine to clean the olive oil out. It's so mean. Even for this show, it's really cruel. It is on the level of exploding Root's luggage, or exploding paint all over Root's luggage.
I like how when to jump ahead a bit, but when the Messiah gets executed, Jill says, "Oh, this bag is really heavy." And then the Messiah says, "Well, it's because I was packing for 21 days, and I was thinking, I guess he needed 21 days worth of, or 21 changes of clothes, because maybe he anticipated having to swim in olive oil in these challenges every round."
Yeah. So the last question is about Bernard's interests, and I'm very glad that they didn't ask these questions to Logan Saunders, because I'm not sure it would have been arable. Mm. The options are the theory of evolution, the underwater world, astrology, designer glasses, the universe, and Formula One.
And heroin, and gambling, and Ponzi schemes, the Fonz from Vidim. So yeah, a lot of weird answers out there. A lot of barrels this time.
Yes, but enough about your interests.
Hey. And then Papa Bear could not help himself but reference the Last Dance. I didn't know he was a big Julia Stiles fan.
Of course. Why wouldn't he be?
Why wouldn't Papa Bear like Julia Stiles? Why would he like Julia Stiles, though?
It must have been about 11 o'clock at night when I was watching this on Sunday, and I was just kind of sat there. I got to this point about halfway through the episode and just went, this show is bonkers and I love it so much. Like, no other show can get away with going, yeah, we're going to make you pick olives, but also for the last question, we are going to spray you with olive oil. Just to, you know, add a little bit of fun to the proceedings.
I like how Lynn was so bad at the dancing challenge, or has been so bad at challenges so far, that even when this is her time to sabotage with them about to knock over the an extra barrel that they shouldn't, that she can't even get over to the barrel to knock it over anyway.
Yeah, she does end up accidentally knocking over two, but luckily it's not the ones that they should avoid.
Yeah, because it wasn't there, but there was one more barrel that they were going to knock over, right? But they didn't get a chance to knock to do it.
No, that was the previous round. That was Charlotte and Philippe trying to knock over yellow.
Yeah, then disregard everything I just said.
I always do.
For the whole podcast.
So Lynn eliminates Formula One, and the pickers don't think it's designer glasses because he doesn't wear them, but it's probably evolution or the underwater world because he's a bit of a nerd. Bernard then eliminates both evolution and the underwater world at the same time, when he was just going for evolution. The correct answer was, thankfully for them, the universe. Some more money goes into the pot.
I really wish it was Scientology was the correct answer.
I know I pointed this out to you, Michael, but you know how they got the Charlotte question right because we heard it earlier in the episode? There was a way we could have got the third question right as well, because after, you know, we basically spent all of Vidim trying to work out if there was any meaning towards those pastel colours they were using for the tables and everything. Here, there's some sort of colour theory explanation in the dancing, because all the ribbons that the dancers are holding while they dance, they match the colours of the correct dancers. So they're all blue, yellow, and red ribbons, which are the three correct answer colours.
It's specifically the people who the questions are being asked about, I think.
Yeah.
Because you told me that before I'd rewatch the episode, so I rewatched the episode and was like, I was watching out for that clue or that hint.
Where would the mole be in this challenge?
Well, I think probably on the olive picking side, to be honest.
Because you get to control the flow of the money, right?
Yeah, and also you can mislead people towards the wrong answer. If you're on the dancing side, then yes, you can accidentally knock over the correct answer and you know what the correct answers are going to be and all that, but you can only do it in one round.
Yeah, you only get one shot, as Eminem would say. Just one shot to knock over one wrong barrel, as opposed to screwing up all three rounds to a certain extent.
And I'll also say, I have set the maximum for this challenge, because technically it's an unlimited challenge, but I reckon the maximum for this challenge was 6,000, because the maximum for the third challenge is 4,000, and they do, on this show, love to have round numbers, so I reckon they were aiming for 20 grand as the max for this episode.
Yeah, I was thinking, because they got 2,800 out of, or 2,800 euros, and I was thinking, because one of the rounds they pretty much maxed out the barrel.
Yep.
So I was thinking maybe it was 4,500, but I forgot that this isn't Vidim, so I'm willing to go with 6,000 as the likely max, or maybe 5,000.
I think it is probably 6, because they completely fail in round 1, so they don't get any. In round 2, they max it out, as you said, so that's probably about 2 kilos. And then in the third one, they do the million-pound drop tactic of splitting over a few answers. So they split over all 3 answers that they had left. So you're looking at roughly the highest amount being split between those 3, and which is going to be about 800. So yeah, that makes it about 6,000 as the max, potentially.
Yeah, I'm good with that explanation. I shall change my notes accordingly.
That's the level I've set it at. I mean, they obviously were only allowed to olive pluck off a certain area, so it was probably about 6 kilos actually on those trees, give or take. I'm happy enough with setting it at 6k for this challenge. So at dinner, Gillian does spot another question mark token hidden in a lantern, and it turns out they missed one hanging in the olive grove on a cuckoo clock. This show is silly.
I like how with Belgian Mole, the good thing with having the 80 minutes running time is that they still show the potential for what, even when contestants miss out on activating additional rewards or potentially certain challenges, that we're informed of that as the audience, as opposed to finding out in a bunch of extra exit interviews or a million different podcasts, all of the unaired material. At least it's like, hey, they missed it. This could have happened. As opposed to just production keeping it to themselves and just saving it up for another season.
Yeah. So it's day 3, and everyone enjoys the quiet morning in the villa, and we find out that Senna lost 35 kilos in the space of 2 years, which is a lot of weight.
It's about as much weight as...
one giant nut.
Yep. I was setting it up and I was waiting to see who knew what I was going to say next. So we lost a mega ball worth of weight.
Yeah, it's 5.5 stone. That's a lot of weight. Very impressive achievement for him.
And Marta, her achievement is having the face of a pigeon, according to Charlotte. That's a compliment, right?
Weirdly, in my notes, I skipped over that because, you know, it could only go badly if we start discussing whether she does or does not have the face of a pigeon.
It's irrelevant if she has the face of a pigeon or not. Just the... You only get that from random Belgian contestants of just, hey, just completely earnest and not playing up for the camera at all and say, hey, your last name refers to a pigeon? Yeah, that makes sense. Your face kind of does look like a pigeon. It's like, what? Where the hell did that come from? How does... This isn't the Simpsons of people whose faces look like things.
The best thing about this is the fact that each week on the website, they do have a pick who your mole is competition to win a 3 grand travel voucher. And before that, they ask you 3 questions about the episode, and one of them is, which animal did Charlotte compare Coco's face to? So they're genuinely embracing this. What I want to know, though, is your description of Coco just face of a pigeon?
No, it wasn't.
Intensive care nurse, face of a pigeon.
Yeah, Charlotte probably has more interesting descriptions for everybody in her notes than I do in my notes.
And we also find out that Charlotte's surname genuinely is De Mol, hence the title quote of this episode, which is Ich bin de Mol from Charlotte.
Which is funny because when I did the tour of Jerusalem with Gianne a couple years ago, our tour guide was a Dutch tour guide, and I was telling them, oh, you're from, because I heard him speaking Dutch on the phone to somebody, and I said, oh, do you watch Wie is de Mol? And I talked about the podcast, and he said, I've watched a little bit, but my last name really is de Mol, so his name is John de Mol. He says, that's my real name.
Didn't he create Big Brother as well? That was John de Mol.
Yeah, it's a very common last name, which is funny that it's just plastered all over reality TV in the Netherlands and Belgium.
So a worker then taps Bernard on the shoulder and takes him to the office. There's another token hidden in the wind chime outside the office.
That everyone also doesn't find.
Well, someone does. It's been pretty much confirmed at this point that the mole did take it out of the wind chime.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because we saw at the end of this challenge, or at the end of this bit of the challenge, that it was snapped out of the wind chime.
I assume the mole went last then, to make it fair for everybody? Or close to last? They wouldn't make the mole go first, that'd be a bit cheap.
Bernardo was either first because he's first alphabetically or because he had two of them already. But we don't actually see the correct order necessarily. And we don't necessarily see whether the doubler was there at the start of everyone's entrance or whether it was an afterthought thing where the mole had done it after everyone had left their sessions with Jill. It could have been there for everyone and then the mole came back and stole it later.
I like how Jill or Papa Bear butchers the Godfather quote, saying that this is a proposal that is hard to refuse.
Well, there have been many discussions about whether we're going to use the phrase who's been given an offer they can't refuse to become the mole in our show notes. And obviously the answer is yes. Obviously that's the sort of thing I'm going to do. But there have been many a joke made already on Discord about, oh, who's been given an offer they can't refuse? And of course I had these descriptions written months ago because I do these things for when we find out locations. So I was a bit disappointed that someone else thought of the joke before I had the chance to use it properly. So Gilles waits for them in the office with a proposal, an offer they can't refuse. The question marks are doublers. If they are played before a challenge, it doubles the stakes of that challenge. However, only one person will be responsible for the doublers. Only one person will have that role. If that person gets a red screen, the doublers will also leave the game. That person will get a benefit, though, an exemption for the first test. Each of them can watch a video that is 60 seconds long. It does say 90 seconds on the subtitles, but it's 60 only. And can stop it whenever they want. The three fastest to hit the button will have the chance to earn the exemption. However, the video also shows everyone's reactions to being told that they're going on the trip. So they will get to see 9 people having genuine reactions and the mole acting. Lynn is the only person to decide to watch the entire video and not hit the button.
Yeah, she has a bowl of popcorn next to her while she's watching it.
Yep, and there's another doubler hidden at the bottom of that that she doesn't even find.
Yeah, there's a doubler in the popcorn bowl. And then when she goes to take it, Jill's like, what the hell are you doing? I was watching Treasure Island on my phone.
I got a huge laugh about how she basically told Jill, I decided not to take an exemption no matter what before she got here. And then Jill's was like, it's just an offer. And then she's pretty much, well then, you force my hand.
Is Lynn the least moliest contestant they've ever had? She's just doing nothing to even be suspicious.
Yeah. Lynn is the molche.
Yeah, she really is. She just wants money and wants everyone to be harmonious. Olche maybe didn't want that, but she just wants harmony in the group.
I kind of do love that they made a big deal about her, this secret role and all that sort of stuff that's going to make the mole's job harder. And then it turns out to basically just be, oh, we're having a treasurer this season.
Do you think the mole would want to hit the button quickly?
I don't know. I think it's a bit hard for us to tell at the moment because we don't know like the full details of how it gets played. Like if it's, if you learn the challenge rules before you decide whether to play it, learn how much it's worth, all that sort of stuff, or whether you can like play it for parts of a task. Like say you could play it for the photo group in the boat challenge, but not the talkers or the quiz group. Or if, say, if they've got a pot drain coming and you play it in that challenge, is the drain doubled? Like, there's a lot of variables here that we don't know. Like, we don't know enough about what's going on to know whether the mole wants this or not.
I will say from a podcast point of view, admin-wise, I am only going to double the maximums of the challenges that they're played on. So I'm not going to treat everything as a potential like, oh, you could earn 20 grand in this challenge. It's going to be, if it's played in that challenge, then the maximum will be doubled as well for my stats.
I guess what the mole could have done in this challenge is watch the whole video, but then as a group, make it clear that they didn't really see any details beyond the first 15 to 20 seconds to get voted out. That'd be the one tactic I can think of to reduce money, or just be one of the ones who did buzz early or midway through, and then just focus on making sure the group votes out somebody who they know wasn't one of the first three to buzz in, and just rely more on deflection onto somebody else as a way to make sure the money was taken out of the pot. There's just a lot of ways for the mole to play it this way, I think.
I've got a feeling that the mole was probably told who the three were on their tablet screen. because that's the best way for production to let them know how to play it. Because we know that if they'd got to about four rounds without voting anyone out correctly, it would have got down to about €125, I think. At which point, when do they say, no, we're going to zero now? There must have been a fail-safe for that. So the mole probably needed to be on the voting side, I would say, rather than the having the doubler side, just so that they could steer the discussion if they needed to, and if they were actually in danger of just leaving the three people alone, basically. Which is theoretically possible in this challenge. It's unlikely, but it's theoretically possible for it to have just been the three maybes left at the end.
Can we comment on how terrible Stephanie's strategy was?
Yes, we can. Like, so many people just completely overplayed their hand on this challenge.
It's like, you know that other people saw way more than you did, so why claim to say something that can be easily disproven by multiple people in their group? I saw you at 39 seconds. Well, I watched it to 37 seconds and then saw myself, so obviously you're lying.
I think the absolute funniest thing in this episode for me is, you know, with how much effort they put into everything normally, they get like the little tiniest little pieces of paper they could find to write their votes on.
I did think it was interesting that Gilles didn't reveal all the votes. He just said who had a majority or who had the most. Which means that the mole could probably have thrown in some hinky votes just to have a little fun with it, basically.
I thought Bernard was going to get voted out too, because he had a really tough time with bluffing about how much of the video he saw. He was being way too vague, but Stephanie made such an outrageous claim that could easily be disproven that somehow he got to be the last person standing.
Yeah.
So each of them finds out if they're in the fastest three via a tablet. The three are Stephanie, Caroline, and Bernard. The rest of the group must amass two of the three as quickly as possible. The faster they do it, the more they will earn up to €4,000. Each time they incorrectly eliminate someone, it halves the money they can win. Caroline pushed after 0.42 seconds, and she overplays her hand completely. And Senna claims that he saw Gillian in a t-shirt, but that proves that he didn't get that far. And Gillian was the first person shown as well. In the first round, two people will be eliminated. Caroline was the first to be voted out, followed by Charlotte, which does half the stakes. The second round begins, and Coco suspects Bernard. He pressed after 0.4 seconds, and he manages to bullshit his way through seeing Gillian, as he correctly says that Gillian was wearing a shirt. Mikhail then interrogates Stephanie, who pressed after 0.23 seconds, who claims that she didn't see him, but stopped at 39 seconds. He, however, was visible at 37 seconds, and she gets caught in a lie. And the third person voted out with a majority of votes is Stephanie, and that means that they earn $2,000, $4,000 for the challenge, and $8,800 out of $20,000 for the episode and season so far. Can I also point out, that is more money than was earned in the entirety of Vidim 24.
I remember Jack Bauer in Vidim 24.
Vidim 24 ended with a lower pot than Belkia has ended the first episode with.
And they have doublers, not drainers.
Bernard then reveals himself as the responsible person, and Gilles tells him to guard them well until the next elimination, which does suggest that he's not keeping them all season, to me.
I'm surprised they didn't have the Dia del Topo lady to say that. Guard it well.
And we also see that the doubler was taken from the wind chime, presumably by the mole. It is now time for the test. 20 questions about the identity and actions of the mole. Whoever knows least goes home, except for the mole who can never go home. And Bernard has an exemption for this test. Stephanie says it's a bit early to be on one suspect, but she doesn't think it's Caroline. Philippe says it's definitely not Gillian. He's the youngest, the most likable, but also the biggest chatterbox. Charlotte says it would be interesting for the mole to have a doubler. Her main suspect is Caroline, but all three who received the maybe message are suspicious to her. Mikhail says the mole worked efficiently. It's not a bad idea for the mole to be the most responsible and then lose the doublers along the way. Caroline says Mikhail hung next to her and was counting faster than she was, which was suspicious. Lynn says Philippe is even worse at quizzes than her, and she's really bad at them. Senna's main suspect is Coco, but he's spreading. She hasn't contributed anything to the pot yet. Coco found it suspicious that Bernard was angry he couldn't go to the Olive Grove. That was where the money was, so the mole must have been in that group. And Gillian thinks that the mole is busy earning trust, and then is going to destroy them. Gilles says the harvest is rich 3 days in. €8,800 and four doublers to be played from the next day onwards. And he says the test was a tie and that time was the tiebreaker. Gillian's name is the first to be typed in and it's an instant red screen.
Brutal.
Very brutal.
Is this the first red screen ever?
I can't think of another one because this is a rare example of me not knowing the runtime either. So I was genuinely surprised that he went home first because usually when I'm doing my notes and stuff, I can see the runtime and I'm like, oh yeah, we've only got a couple of minutes left. It's going to be a quick one. But because I was watching on the TV, I had no idea he was going home. Obviously the music was building, but it always does. And it terrifies me, that music. I've said that to Jill many a time at this point, but I was genuinely shocked he went. I can't think of another first screen that was a red one.
Yeah, as soon as he was probably seeing his name typed in first, he's thinking, the Messiah's here for another round. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Shit. Hot for Donna.
Yeah. So long farewell, Afida Zain Houlihan.
And I think there's only one way to eulogize him, really, or coolahize him in this case. And that is to pronounce he gone.
He gone. And then he even references Matteo.
Yeah, I do love that Matteo Simoni has just become a catchword for the first boot now. Oh, I didn't want to become a world famous actor, Matteo Simoni.
And then Jillian, after going home on the very first quiz, makes the outrageous claim, oh, I'm 99% sure I know who the mole is now. No, you don't. You just went home first.
My favorite thing about this is his entire highlight of the 3 days in Sicily was getting to drive a BMW. I mean, that is textbook Big Brother Canada style speech from the sponsors.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about this was driving our sponsored car, which you can get from BMW.
And my second favorite moment was the meal we got from Skip the Dishes.
My third favorite was the family visit at the Wendy's window.
Yeah. And then that one task where while we were picking olives, we could use a Samsung Galaxy phone to see what the dancers were doing.
The remaining nine then get startled by the screen, and in a repeat of 2020, as Jill's video about Pandora's box plays again. The box isn't behind them this time, although we do see that Pandora's box has gone from Greece and made its way to the shores of Sicily.
This fucking show.
I know. Sadly, I was spoiled on Pandora's box return, but this fucking show, like, the production values on this were just top-notch.
And then when they're saying, oh, that's from Alina's season, and then Carolyn says, who's Alina? Is one of you Alina?
Am I Alina?
Am I Alina? Who is this guy? Who is this Papa Bear fellow that everyone keeps talking about online? Who is Matteo Simoni?
So next time everyone tries to protect their candles, Coco and Charlotte drive with ice cream cones in the back, an old challenge returns, and Pandora's box is back to wreak havoc on the show. In our pool, the pool will officially be revealed in next week's recap. You can join in and give us your week one order now with the link in our social media or in the description of this episode. It will be open until the next episode airs on Sunday. As I won last year's pool, again, I will get first draft and we'll alternate until we both have four people. Whoever's left over will go to the team who loses someone next week. And in the event that it is a double, then whoever gets the first red screen will also get the bonus person. Please submit the more first suspicions that we get, the more data I get to pour over, and the more hilarious it is when I go. And 17 people were wrong when people start actually getting eliminated.
And also, the less likely it is that I win again.
Yes. On the subject of Bindles winning again, please do the suspect list to stop him winning again. You can do the Bothers Bar suspect list each week at the link in our bio. It's suspectlist.rtvwarriors.com. I will try and remember to tweet out when the suspect list opens, but just keep an eye on your emails. It will certainly usually be up by like Tuesdays. I reckon it was up very early this week because I watched it pretty much as soon as the episode went up. The suspect list question this week is, did the mole get to Jill's table? Simple yes-no question to begin the season.
I mean, they all did.
You know what I mean. Did they get to... I think the actual...
Did they earn money?
Yeah, I think the actual wording on it is, did the mole reach Jill's table with a mole book in time? but you know what I mean. Did them all earn money in that first challenge? Stop being a pedant. That's what Briggs here for.
So, suspect list time?
Well, first couple of questions before we do suspect lists. Do you think the Pandora's Box penalty will be the same as it was in Greece? And what do you think it's going to be?
What was the penalty in Greece again?
We don't know. That's the thing. This has always been the big mystery. And in fact, I was reading an interview that Jill did before the finale last year with one of the fan sites. And someone did ask, will we ever find out what the penalty was for Pandora's Box? And he's like, oh, I don't know. It's something in our bank. We might reuse the penalty. And I'm like, yeah, Jill, we know what you're talking about here. You knew it was coming back. I have a suspicion on what the penalty could be in this season and whether it's the same as the Greece one, we'll probably never know. But I think if Pandora's Box is opened, it will halve the value of the challenges.
Ooh. I think it might cause a double elimination.
Double elimination, I think, was what we theorized at the time. But I think in a season where they're playing a quote-unquote double game, I think it'd be interesting if the penalty was, yeah, all of the prize values are going to be halved now. So yeah, you're going to have to play the doublers if you want it to go back to normal.
It's got to be some sort of big, big change. Otherwise, they wouldn't. I think that makes sense.
Yeah. That's the thing that I would do in their position, I think, this season.
Yeah.
Because it causes real consequences to the whole idea of the doubler twist, I think. I love that they're bringing back Pandora's Box. I think it's one of the best set pieces they've ever done. So it's brilliant that it's getting another outing. But I just love the potential ramifications of it. I suspect it's getting open this time. I can't see them keeping watching it all night again. All right, final two questions. Who do you suspect and who's going home next week?
So my suspect list is Senna in the first spot, then Stephanie, then Charlotte, or Lolo, as she will soon be referred to as, apparently. Then Philippe, and then I had Jillian in the next spot, but the Messiah is gone. Mikhail, Bernard, Coco, Lynn, then Carolyn.
Interesting.
And my descriptions for each person was... For Charlotte, I had short brown hair. For Bernard, I had funky glasses. For Carolyn, I had old woman. For Senna, I had porn star mustache and slightly rocker hair. Lynn, I just had, well, the only one in the cast who is Asian. For Stephanie, I had very long brown hair. Mikhail, I had beard. Jillian, I had buzz cut dude with hat, a.k.a. Noah's older brother. For Coco, I had shoulder-length hair and possibly Iranian. I thought she looked potentially Iranian. And then for Philippe, I said, looks like Scarface's cousin. So those are my descriptions for all 10 people.
And who do you think's going next week?
I think Carolyn's gone next round.
She gone?
She gone! She will be gone!
What do you suspect, Spindles?
Well, firstly, on Lynn, you know, the visual of her being on... her, of all people in this cast, being on the boat on her own. Kind of unfortunate. Although at least she didn't have to dangle over the side, so that's a win for her.
It's not as unfortunate as it would have been if five people had said no and they were all crowded onto that dinghy.
So first, Mikhail. I think they were really trying to hammer it home, like that the Charlotte stuff, with Nick Bendemol and all that sort of stuff. And I think as much as, you know, you can see Pastor Bear doing the, oh, we told you in episode one, you should have paid attention sort of thing. I also know he really likes annoying you personally, Michael. And I think making Mikhail the mole would do that.
I will say I think Charlotte being the mole would annoy me more.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, him cackling in my ear again, going, oh, well, we told you at minute one of this season that she was the mole. You should have just trusted us. That would annoy me far more than Mikhail being the mole, I think.
Yeah, so I think Mikhail first. I think, I mean, even aside from that, I think he was sort of in the positions where he could do things but not really be highlighted doing things, if that makes sense, which is usually the sort of thing the show goes for. And Coco, Bernard, I think... Again, I think not knowing what's going on with the doublers maybe makes me think the mole might have wanted a little bit more control over them. And then Charlotte, Stephanie, Caroline, Philippe, Lynn, and then center at the bottom. Yeah, I think it's got to be Caroline or Philippe next week.
And Bindles and I were talking about this before the episode when we were waiting for Lee Saunders, in that we were hoping this season there would be a bit more variety in our suspects and all that sort of stuff. And now I'll tell you what my suspect list is, because my number one is Senna and my number two is Mikhail. We genuinely have not colluded on this at all, which is hilarious.
Now watch it be Stephanie.
Yeah. The big preseason suspects, I think, were Stephanie and Charlotte. They were definitely throwing Charlotte down our throats this week in terms of she's a suspect, all that sort of stuff. She does look a lot like either Uma or Anka, depending on which one you're actually talking about, of the twins from Canary Islands. I think it would be potentially an interesting choice if they made Charlotte, given that her entire personality is, yes, I broke lockdown rules at the moment. Stephanie would be an interesting choice. She is my third suspect, but my suspicions are very tenuous, I think this week. As you said, Mikhail, very much in the positions that a mole probably would want to be. Senna, I just got the immediately suspicious vibe that I did when I had Lenny pegged from week one. So very much in the same regard, I'm thinking if they're doing a lot of inspiration from Germany, maybe it's one of those. Well, the mole is actually a very similar archetype to the one from Germany situation. So it's Senna, then Mikhail, and then Stephanie is my top three. Then Coco, because she's absolutely the sort of person that Gilles would cast as a mole, 100%. She's definitely got the personality of fucking with these people, I think. Then Caroline, then Philippe, Charlotte, Bernard, and Lynn. Lynn has pretty much told us that she's not the mole repeatedly in this episode. If it is her, then it's irritating and will annoy me if that's the reveal at the end. Bernard, I'm not sure from a fairness point of view from production that you want your big twist to be controlled by the mole, at least initially. If, as has been implied in this episode, the control of the doublers is going to move around people, then yeah, the mole will probably get them eventually. But I certainly don't think you want to build the big centerpiece at the start of the season around the mole still. You want the mole to actually have a bit of adversity in that role, I think. Charlotte, I think, is just a bit too obvious at this point. And as much as I think Philippe would be an interesting mole and certainly a different archetype to every other mole we've seen on this reboot of the show, I don't think Philippe is the mole that they're going to cast if it was an older mole.
Yeah, he might drop down pretty quick for me.
Yeah, Caroline's going home next week. I'm pretty convinced of that, even though she was my middle suspect this week. Anything else you guys want to say?
No, I'm good.
Nope.
After this bumper episode, that's going to be hilarious fun to edit. God, it is after midnight now. Shit in hell. In that case, thank you for listening to our Demol Valkyria Season 12 recap. We'll be back next week to continue the hunt for the newest mole in Sicily. Don't forget to contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, where we are RTV Warriors. Or you can email us at contact@rtvwarriors.com. Logan's on the artist formerly known as Twitter at Logs of Kweki. Bindles is the Grim Recapper, and I'm MJ Armstone. Thank you to everyone involved in the subtitle process. I mean, there's like 50 of them now. We will see you next week.
Peace out and just chill till the next flavoring.
We're out of Oliver. Quick, drain the giant nut.